Okay, 3, 2.
3, 2, hit it!
It's time to double down with Max and Stacy on Sputnik Radio. Coming up on the show, we talk to Dan Collins. But first, the late great Portuguese writer José Saramago once said, quote, "The U.S. needs to control the Middle East, the gateway to Asia. It already has military installations in Uzbekistan." I know what you're thinking. You're thinking José Saramago died in 2010, a few years before the One Belt, One Road initiative, Stacy.
Yes, it would seem that the spanner in the works of controlling Asia is this One Belt, One Road initiative, of course, going through not too far from Uzbekistan. You know, this plan from China to basically increase trade around the world that obviously one presumes it plans to control. And I think this is part of the underlying reason for the increasing tensions and conflict between the U.S. and China, because there was a crazy statement made at the APEC meeting, the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Region, which includes China, Japan, the U.S., Australia, and many other nations in the Pacific region. And they met in Papua New Guinea, and they exited the conference without any sort of communique, the first time ever. And that is because of this tension between China and the U.S. Mike Pence said in his statement there, because of course the U.S. president did not attend, this was seen as a slight, but the vice president attended, and Mike Pence said that basically, he was against empire and military aggression, but he was talking about China, not the U.S.
Right. Well, you know, as we've been saying, we're entering an era of deglobalization, which means de-dollarization and neo-mercantilization. So, in other words, when Trump came to office, he let the world know quite clearly that this idea of globalization, the so-called globalists, as he calls them and others, would be taken to task. And that the U.S. was going to kind of strike out on its own and do deals on its own. And so now we're seeing the fallout from that, for better or worse, but that's the trend. And we've seen this, you know, I think, this parallel to the pre-World War I, right? There was a huge period of globalization, and then the powers that be got into these spats, and it led to a world war. So a lot of people say trade war leads to hot war. Maybe that's the path we're on.
Well, you know, certainly it's been good for Papua New Guinea because apparently the U.S. is very concerned about China spending money there, which China is saying is not a loan, it's just a gift. They've given them money, they've built some infrastructure. Now the U.S. and Australia have partnered to deliver also some systems and utilities like electric and, you know, telecoms infrastructure because they're concerned about China. So Papua New Guinea is making out well from this conference, but we are now here with an expert. This is Dan Collins from the China Money Report, also of Heisenberg Capital now. He's joined our company. And by the way, you know, this is not a fake NPR with fake noises in the background. We are actually sitting with you in a garden out in North Carolina where you are visiting. And that is a real water fountain and birds chirping and people in the background. And we're here with Dan Collins. Dan, what do you think of the fact that there was no official communique at the end of the APEC conference?
Well, I think we've reached the stages where words have broken down and they're no longer of much use. The tensions are very high. We are moving into the next Cold War, very reminiscent of the days when the Soviet Union and United States would compete for allies around the globe, and you'd either join the Soviet camp or you'd join the U.S. camp. And this is what the world's now turning into. You're going to be in the U.S. and allied camps, or you're going to be in the Chinese camp. So do you want to still stay with the U.S., or do you want to go in the Chinese camp where you're probably going to get a lot of money, roads, electrical development, and economic improvements? So right now, the great game is on to decide for political struggle to get these countries into each camp.
You know, it's like a great game of debt to equity swap. In other words, you've got two huge economies, China and the U.S. They're all based on debt, and they're trying to convert debt to equity. So in the case of China, they're trying to convert their debt into One Road, One Belt, and to create equity for the economy over there. But it's a race against an imploding debt bomb. The U.S., similarly, they've got a debt bomb there. And they try, of course, to rectify that typically by expanding their military around the world because they see themselves as this global empire, and that means a lot of military spending. So who's going to implode fastest? And who, in other words, who's going to really accomplish this debt for equity swap? If you had, if you were a betting man, who's better positioned, China or the U.S., Dan?
I'd have to bet on China at this point. It's not just because I spent 20 years there, but you can see they've been on the upswing. They're going kind of in the wrong direction in the last 5 years. They're getting more political control. The debt, you continue to see malinvestment, according to the old Austrian school. As the government takes more control of the economy, there's a lot of malinvestment in China. Just as you said, though, they're trying to, you know, with all these now idle steelworks and train companies, they're trying to export that. They're trying to build up infrastructure around the globe, which they are. But the debts are piling up fast. So now we are in the middle of a confrontation where the U.S. under Trump is trying to reindustrialize. When we talk about, we used to say, who was going to fall first? I would ask people, have you ever been to Detroit? We fell. Economically, we fell. Our Rust Belt is a disaster. We have so many former workers who are on opiates now. Now we're back at close to 4% GDP. The Chinese stock market is in almost a collapse. It's down 30%. Business of confidence is at a 30-year low in China. The rich have been getting out. So we're just at, I think, the very beginning stages of the next Cold War. But it will continue. China, on the other hand, they have a very highly motivated, highly skilled workforce. They can go out to these countries and build the roads and build the trains and build the buildings and build the sports stadiums. Whereas when we go to our electrical companies, like a General Electric, they're in collapse because they've been selling credit default swaps in Eastern Europe. They're not building anything anymore.
Well, you know, it's like FDR. You know, after the Depression, they had huge infrastructure projects in the United States, like the Hoover Dam. You know, these huge projects that soaked up a lot of capacity, got people working. They worked through the Depression, and it led to a war, eventually World War II in this case. But it sounds like that's kind of China's approach is infrastructure build. But still, this debt bubbles in both countries are collapsing. I wanted to ask you about the Chinese media. How are they covering Mike Pence's threats? He's kind of, you know, overtly made threats against China, like they shouldn't build this one road, one belt policy. How is this being perceived, or do they even acknowledge what Pence is saying?
Well, the Chinese population in general have, remember, they still have the remembrance and the kind of victim mentality of World War II and what Japan did. And they are very, very sensitive to anything with foreigners criticizing China or pushing China around. So the Chinese media in general will actually tamp down rhetoric if it's foreign officials criticizing China, because the Chinese population can radically get out of control very fast and hit the streets and start protesting. I was myself in China 2001 when we bombed the Serbian embassy in Belgrade, and literally the embassy was surrounded. Rocks, every window was torn out with rocks, and we were basically hiding up in a bar till 4 a.m. until the crowds left. So they can get out of control very fast. So the media actually tampers down a lot in many cases.
You mentioned the previous Cold War, and that was with the Soviet Union and the United States, but those were two competing, radically different ideologies, and they were competing for hearts and minds and basically control over various regions around the world. A lot of it was done through proxy wars and actual violent wars. In this case, it is just China does seem to be, even though they have the Communist Party, it doesn't seem remotely communist. It seems actually hyper free market capitalism. But, you know, how do you see that playing out? Do you see any sort of violence erupting? Because it definitely seems like the U.S. realizes we can't compete on a level playing field in terms of actual capitalism. So if you listen to the words of Vice President Mike Pence, it sounds like they're ready to just start a hot war.
Yeah, in this case, we flip-flop. So United States is the Soviet Union today. Our economy is not functioning. We can't put consumer goods on the shelves. Everything we have comes from China. It's unbelievable. I mean, it's not just what you would think of in Walmart. It's virtually everything. So we can't put goods on the shelves anymore, and China is the America where they just have the absolute massive economic capacity. They're getting more and more countries into their camp, buying them off, basically. So, yeah, that's why I think there's a rush now to reindustrialize the United States, start to make our own things, because if there is a conflict, it will happen in the South China Sea. You see a lot of military, I think a month ago, we had a Chinese warship and a U.S. warship come within feet of each other, kind of like in a game of chicken. So, I mean, this could, you know, World War I kicked off. Nobody believed it would turn into World War I. Same with World War II. These things just happen and takes everyone by surprise. So we're in quite, a bit of danger.
Yeah, I mean, what we've been saying, you know, talking to folks like Jim Rickards and others, you know, that currency war leads to trade war, leads to hot war. And certainly we've had the currency war. You know, if the story for the past 5 years has been You know, is China manipulating the forex market, the currency market, and is it an unfair manipulation, et cetera? And then that led to Donald Trump coming into office and saying, well, we'll fix it with trade wars. And now the trade wars are upon us. And now, as you're saying, they're sailing within feet of each other in the South China Sea. So is that axiom seems to be proven correct, and we're heading into a bit of a hot war regionally. And I don't know what to say to that, Stacey, other than that sounds pretty bad.
Well, it does sound pretty bad, but, you know, China is striking up amazing, you know, relationships with Russia, which is not a typical one for them. Also with Germany and places like that. So most countries don't actually want war, especially in this modern era. They just want to do trade. Our founding fathers, of course, did say something along the lines of, you know, we shouldn't get involved in any foreign entanglements. We should just trade with all nations, friends and allies with none, because they just bring you into war. So which do you think will win, like the war or the no war and just trade?
Well, I think if you see the way the deep state in the United States portrays Russia, they want war. They always want war. They live in a bubble in Washington, D.C. We've just been in constant military conflicts since basically Vietnam. I think neither side, in case of U.S. or China, excluding nuclear weapons, can win a war. China can completely control their coast. Aircraft carriers nowadays are kind of useless with GPS and carrier killer missiles. So I don't see any of these sides winning a war. We could have a limited conflict where there's a shooting and someone gets a boat sunk. And that could be the end of the dollar. I've always kind of predicted where we're going to see the end of the dollar is that China sinks one or two U.S. military ships in the South China Sea. And then we start to question, wow, maybe America isn't, even though we spend all that money, do we really get the massive hegemonic military power we think we have? And when that comes into question, the dollar could come into question, and we could get a cascading domino from there.
Of course, I would have thought that would have happened when, considering the fact that we couldn't defeat a country of 25 million people living in a desert where there's nowhere to hide, but that being Iraq, and let's not even talk about Afghanistan, which doesn't even have a military or weapons, or like how we can't defeat them after 20 years there. But finally, you know, let's move on to this trade war, because there was that recent China Import Export Expo, and that was the first, and there were many, many trade deals announced. And in particular, China was trying to do a little bit of soft power and say, hey, okay, we're open for business. Start importing to us. We're going to reduce some tariffs. What do you see coming out of that? Was it any real new deals announced? And what do you make of the lightening and reducing of their tariffs and things like that?
Well, all these expos and these big government meetings, normally the process is they go around and talk to all their big companies, their national champions, and they look for deals. Have you done any deals? And then they will kind of take that under their wing and announce it. So a lot of those were already done with or without the expo. With that being said, China has done some things to counter in the trade war that not many people are aware of. For instance, the VAT tax is normal 17%. In the past, have not given back the full 17%. Now they're giving the full 17%. They're also promising support to private industry and tax rebates because of the trade war. And then they've also let their currency drop about 8%. So you see the tariff was 10% right now, but they've kind of made that up already with currency depreciation. So by January, we're scheduled to go into 25% tariffs on a lot of things. And the Trump administration is getting a lot of kickback on that, because we do need to do this. We need to fight back with China. We need to get our industries back. We're talking about the U.S. market. We're not trying to take their market. Their market is close to us. But we do need to do it in a gradual, systematic process, because once you disrupt economic supply chains like what the Soviet Union did, you can invite chaos.
Right. That does sound like some good intentions are coming very late in the game. And the war, the die has been cast, I think, to quote Julius Caesar or somebody. Anyway, that's going to do it. This episode of Double Down with me, Max Keiser, and Stacey Herbert on Sputnik Radio. Thanks to our guest, Dan Collins of the China Money Report and Heisenberg Capital, coming to you from an undisclosed park somewhere in North Carolina. Haha. Until next week. Bye, y'all.